Who would have thought interest rates would have tripled in 9 months? Nobody. So, and that's another sensitivity study or stress test that Pete, you need to do, is if you are planning on holding a property for say like 5 years, but your loan expires in 2 years, you're gonna have to refi. And what interest rate are you going to refi at? You got to have a huge range of interest rates to see what's going to make sense. I mean, yeah, you can use your 10-year treasury or 30-year or whatever and get your best guess, but no one's really going to know. So you need to stress test. Welcome to the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast, where precision meets performance in commercial real estate. I'm your host, Jason Williams, and every week we deep dive into the strategies and systems and stories behind rock solid underwriting. Whether you're a seasoned analyst, an up-and-coming investor, or a commercial real estate professional looking to sharpen your edge, this show is your front row seat to expert insights, emerging trends, and real-world underwriting tactics that stand the test of time and scrutiny. From market assumptions to debt structuring, cap rates to cash flow, we're cutting through the noise and getting to the numbers that matter. So sharpen your pencils and fire up those models. Let's get to work. This is Ironclad Underwriting. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this episode of the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Williams. And again, I got my good friend and business partner, Frank Catalano, with me. How are you doing, Frank?
Just another day trying to move forward and figure out new ways to make money.
So I think in our last episode, we did a little bit of a state of the market, where we were with lending issues we were currently facing. But one thing that has been coming up a lot, especially with a lot of my consulting clients, is stress testing. What does that mean and how do you do it? You might hear it as like sensitivity analysis or something like that. But basically what it is, are you checking what happens if some of your assumptions are, say, different than, or so you have assumptions and you want to go with like your best case, but what happens if those variables change significantly? How does that affect your deal? One thing that I find in particular is assuming like an exit cap rate. And that can make or break a deal. That actually usually is the case that makes or breaks deal. And I've seen a lot of optimistic people lately. I'm looking at one deal right now, and I can't get into the specifics because it's when I signed an NDA, so I can't. But I mean, it's a live deal. People are trying to invest their money in it. And one big red flag that I saw was they're buying it at about a like 6.5 or 7 cap and plan on selling it at a 5 point whatever cap. And generally speaking, you want to see cap rate expansion. You want to see that cap rate grow every year, not compress.
You want to underwrite cap rate expansion.
Yeah, you want to underwrite cap rate expansion versus underwriting cap rate compression. Now, if you sell and the cap rate's compressed, guess what? That's just a bonus and that's money in your pocket and you can do that all day long, but you don't want to underwrite with that because more likely than not, it's going to go up and not down. So that's just one thing that I've seen.
Yeah. With that being said, Jason, I agree that out of all the different ways to stress test or to say you're being conservative in the underwriting, usually one of the biggest ones is the exit cap. We just had a deal. I spoke to someone this morning and the deal's being bought at 6.9 percent cap rate. This person is considering becoming a general partner on the deal. They'd be the boots on the ground partner and be involved in some of the asset management. It's about an hour from their house. So none of the other partners live nearby. And he's looking at the numbers and he says, "What do you guys plan on selling this for?" And they literally had it underwritten to sell at a 5.9. And it's like, that's the exact opposite of how to be conservative. And I told them, I said, we discussed it. I said, I'm not saying you can't make money on this deal. You just have to be careful that if they're already trying to say that the cap rate is going to sell for 1% below what we're at now, I mean, there's a lot of people, especially in Texas, that are really struggling because interest rates have not gone down at all. And we kept thinking it was going to go down this number of times, this and that. And yeah, it's too late. So
Yeah,
we don't know where the rate's going to be.
and we had a deal. We have a deal, and that's what we talked about last time, where we bought it at a 5 cap. 5 cap was average for our market. It was like 4.75 to 5.25 or whatever. So we're like right in the middle. We got a good, really good property, really clean and everything. But now, and when I underwrote it way back then, I was putting in like 20 basis points of expansion every year. So after 5 years, it would have increased from like a 5 cap to a 6 cap. But now we're facing issues where we're actually sitting at like high sixes to low sevens. Like 7.25 is what we're getting, where we were getting quotes from lenders for refi. And if I underwrote it at that way back then, or did the sensitivity, we probably wouldn't have moved forward with it. I'm not saying it's a bad deal. I'm just saying it's an unexpected thing that's causing a lot of issues right now.
No,
And
it's a beautiful property, number one. Number two, basically, we already know that you're good with numbers and you're good at underwriting. You get better through experience. All these mistakes that I've made over the years, that has improved my future deals, you know.
yeah, and that's what we're all about here is improvement, not perfection. So, I mean, if you're improving each time and you learn something, then you're going to be better off. You can't wait for the perfect deal because the perfect deal is never going to happen. And you can't predict the economic issues that we've been facing. It's like no one would have thought about that. It's like who would have thought interest rates would have tripled in 9 months? You know, nobody. So, and that's another sensitivity study or stress test that Pete, you need to do is if you are planning on holding a property for say like 5 years, but your loan expires in 2 years, you're going to have to refi. And what interest rate are you going to refi at? You know, you got to have a huge range of interest rates to see what's going to make sense. I mean, yeah, you can use your 10-year treasury or 30-year or whatever and get your best guess, but no one's really going to know. So you need to stress test. All right, well, whenever it comes time to refi, we need to check it at maybe 3% and go up to 10% and just see what it looks like between there. And hopefully it'll lie somewhere in the middle, but or on the lower end, but
How's your crystal ball? You've been polishing it, Jason?
yeah.
I'm just thinking of the fact that obviously when you're buying a deal that might have a 5 to 7 year hold and you're starting out with a 2 year loan, it's kind of tough to make the right predictions. And that's why we're calling it stress testing here. That's why it's important to say, hey, what if scenarios?
And a lot of times you go in, it's like, all right, we're going to hold this for 5 years and you're going to get a 5 year loan. But guess what? At the 11th hour, that 5 year loan falls through and you're trying to salvage all your investment. It's still a good deal. So you might end up with a 2 year bridge loan. You never know what's going to happen throughout the process. And that's a lot of times how people end up with them. And they never intended on getting that, but they got it anyway, you know?
I mean, there's a lot of deals to keep moving on from this. There's a lot of deals that people have a certain time frame they're planning, but I've had deals that we were told it was going to be a 5 year minimum, and we sold it at 2.5 because number one, the numbers worked. Everybody was making as much of a profit, or the IRR was still the same. Maybe the profit wasn't as high, but they said, you know what? We don't like where the rates are going, where the market's going. We're going to take our profits now and move on. And then we have the opposite problem where it's like, yeah, guys, we told you we're planning on 4 years, but if we sell right now, we're going to sell at a loss. So we're going to try to hold it for another year or two.
Yeah, and I've seen that one. I've actually been on both sides where they're supposed to hold it for 5 years and ended up selling it at like 19 months or something like that. It was a weird deal, and while I didn't really lose money on it, I didn't make any either, but that's better than some people losing everything. So I have to I give them credit for that. But that's another stress test or sensitivity you can do is your hold period. Are you going to hold it for 36 months, 60 months, 84 months, whatever? You can run these sensitivities, you can run them, and you can see what it will look like, what returns will look like for your investors if you do that. And that gives you a good idea of how the property would perform. And then you can also show that to your investors, say, hey, this is what will happen if we hold it for 4 years or 5 years or 7.5 years. And you give them an idea so that they're like, you don't give them just a single number. And then when month 60 rolls around and you still haven't sold, and all their expectations just flew out the window. So, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do beforehand running these stress testing or sensitivity studies to better prepare you as an operator and the investors as well. And another one is your like stabilization periods. Like, all right, you're going to buy a property and you're going to rehab 80% of the units. And when you rehab 80% of the units, maybe your occupancy drops to like 85 or 90%, and you're planning on that. And then it's going to take, all right, we'll take 24 months to get it all done. We'll get our NOI boosted after 24 months and everything. And it's like, well, what happens if you fall behind on your renovation schedule? What if it's 36 months? How does that affect your numbers? Or what if you actually do it a lot faster and you do it in 18 months? So, I mean, there's all these studies you can do. And if your model is set up, all you have to do is maybe push a button or have it automatically calculate everything for you. And so you can see what those numbers are right off the bat. And instead of either having to rerun a whole model, or just probably what happens most of the time is it's like, oh, well, our business plan's changing, and you not even run the numbers to see how it's going to affect them. I think that's what I see most is like once you veer off your business plan, people just wad up their underwriting and throw it away and just kind of hang on and hope for the best.
Well, I mean, the business plan is as good as the day it was written. I mean, obviously you want to look at it and you want to try to improve things, but it does change when the tax bill surprises you or when the insurance bill surprises you or you're talking about stabilization period. We have a property right now that we had planned on, just a few months and come to find out it's the whole thing's blown up and it's going to take a year to stabilize.
Or maybe even if it's not a renovation schedule, maybe just your like your normal vacancy, you maybe budget for like 5 to 10%, maybe 7% on average, but you're actually sitting at 17%. I mean, you're not really needing to do any more renovations. You just don't have the people, the butts in the seats, basically. You don't have people moving in. And so are you running the numbers to see what that would look like? And you should at least have like a break-even occupancy number so that you say, all right, if we hit this number, we can still pay all our bills, we can still pay our debt service, but that's about all we can do. And hopefully you have that calculated in your model. But what happens if you don't, you know? Or another one is rent growth. Are you accounting for like I tried to do like an average of 3% rent growth per year. Some markets that might be low, some markets that might be high. And when we talked about temporary trends for the long game a few episodes ago, where people were underwriting San Antonio at 30% plus rent growth every year, like one, that's not sustainable. But two, if you underwrite it for three, and then maybe you go down to like, what happens if we go to negative five or we go up to 10%? What do those numbers look like? And then, so then you can again, all this is doing is preparing yourself, the operator, for what's coming ahead. And it's also putting a good idea. One, your investors are going to see it's like, hey, at least they're thinking about this stuff, whether it happens or not, or at least mindful of bad things can happen that are outside of our control. And so I think they feel better about themselves when they invest, because most of the time they invest in the operator, not really the deal. I mean, sometimes it's only the deal, but a lot of times it's the operator. So what do you think?
I mean, I agree with the concept, especially when you talk about rent growth. Like you said, we talked about this a little bit more on a different episode, but Phoenix had 25% year-over-year rent growth like 3 years in a row, and that's a problem. That's not only is that a problem because tenants won't be able to afford it, but it's also a problem for people that tend to think that just because something's happening now means it's going to happen in the future. And past performance doesn't affect future results, I guess. Eventually, it had to stall, and it went to zero. So there are people that were counting, even if they underwrote a little lower, there were people that were counting on those kind of rent growth numbers, especially for refis, paying out distributions, stuff like that. And
Yeah.
especially the building, the people. So Phoenix had a massive amount of new builds. So, it takes a few years to build those things. And yeah, that was a problem.
And those kind of rent growths, they affect everything. It's like you're trying to get out of it. So it was like, all right, well, you feel like this property is now valued at, say, 10 million, but all your offers are coming in at 6.5, maybe 7 million, but you still have like an $8 million loan. So I mean, you still have to pay that off. And so I mean, it's causing problems for everybody. It's hard to find deals. It's like, one, a buyer is not obligated to get the seller out of any business relationship they have with a bank or their investors or anything else. They're only in it to make money for their investors or themselves. So they're not obligated to pay over 8 million just because you have a loan on it, and
We've seen a lot of
they're not going to. And but those like artificially high growth rates are causing like a lot of higher expectations of sales price and stuff like that, and then people are coming to a rude awakening. That's probably why a lot of people are handing keys over, because there's really no way out. They don't want to sell a property and then still owe another 1.5 million to get out of it, you know.
some properties are punishing.
Yep.
Mistakes
And
were made.
so you, one, never use temporary trends for the long game. We mentioned that a few episodes ago. We're reiterating it now, but also run stress tests to see what, like what you said, what will happen if your growth rate is zero or negative, or what if you do get up to 25%. Personally, that's just gravy. It's kind of like a cap rate of compression. Anything beyond like conservative or realistic underwriting is going to be gravy for you, but you don't want to plan on the gravy whenever you underwrite. So.
I'm thinking of the joke with the concept of the gravy train. You don't want your train to stop before you get the gravy. So yes.
Are there any other stress tests or sensitivity studies that you'd
Those are
like to
main
look at?
ones. When we think of one that you mentioned a while ago was the concept of looking at expense ratios. So when we look at some of these pro formas, and we know pro formas and how accurate they are, they're almost as accurate as Zillow. When we think of expense ratios, some of the time I'm seeing, expense ratios at like 32%. And I'm not looking at any property. It's very rare to have a property that honestly makes an expense ratio of 32%. Let's put it that way. So as a stress test, I'm often underwriting at 50%, sometimes 55 or 60% if it's older and comes with heat included or all the utilities included, and I don't plan on doing rubs, stuff like that. So expense ratios, I've literally seen new construction, they have expense ratios I've seen at 25% before. And it's like, wow, risky.
I've seen new constructions have lower expense ratios. Typically it's like in the repairs and maintenance section or CapEx section that's a lot lower than normal. But I would only underwrite it low for like the first couple years after warranties expire, because I mean there's a brand new property in town and they were having a ton of issues with HVAC and like flooring and stuff like that. But all that stuff is covered under the manufacturer's warranty or whoever installed its warranty. So they don't have to front those costs. They just have to make a call. It's like, yeah, they happen, but they're not on the hook for them. But once those warranties expire, then you better start increasing that expense ratio up from 35 up to 50% or something like that. Typically, I have been seeing a lot of expense ratios in the 50s. So 50% is where I start at. They are starting to come down, but I usually don't underwrite below like 45%, but I've seen it anywhere as high as 76%. So, I mean, if I'm going to be doing a sensitivity study, I'm going to be ranging it from probably 40 to 70 or 80% just to see what the numbers will do, just so I can prepare myself. And then once you prepare yourself like that, then that gives you a reason why he's like, all right, we can't hit this number. We can't go above 57.5% because this is what will happen. And so if you have the numbers to back that up, that's enough. That's more ammunition for running your property manager to say, hey, this is what we need to do because of this, versus, well, I think we need to do this because expenses are getting too high. If they have a reason behind why we can't go up that high with expenses, they're more likely to do it. So.
So just briefly mention, since we're talking about expense ratio, just the concept that the numbers that we're giving here are mostly for multifamily. If you're looking at other types of real estate or rentals, obviously the expense ratio is going to be widely different. If you're doing self-storage, the expenses are going to be a lot lower. Typically, if you're doing hotels, you might underwrite the expense ratio at 75 or 80%.
Or mobile home community, depending on if you have park or tenant-owned homes, because that will have a big impact as well. So,
And what kind of amenities you're providing?
yep. And if the city's taking care of the roads, or if you're taking care of the roads, or the water, the infrastructure, it's like, does the city go up to the meter for each unit, or does the city just go to some master meter and you're on the hook for everything after that master meter? So, I mean, there's a lot to go into look into. So I mean, it's not just all right, 50% and that's it, said and done for everything. So yep, but mainly speaking for large multifamily, these are the numbers that we're using. So any other stress tests or sensitivities that
I
you can
can't
think
really
of?
think of any.
Yeah, and one, if you can't do the stress testing, you need to either learn how to model it yourself or find someone who can find a model that can. There's a few out there, but the majority that I've seen don't account for any of it. But if you're wanting to learn more, you can look me up, Jason Williams, Ironclad Underwriting. Go to ironcladunderwriting.com. I can help you consult. I can consult with you on how to do it, or you can, well, I have a course that can teach you how to do it. And so if you're interested in learning more, you can come to any of my resources. I got a lot of free resources on my YouTube channel as well. Everything is Ironclad Underwriting. So yeah, if you want to learn more, look me up, look Frank up. Frank's a wealth of knowledge as well. So, we'll catch you next time. Bye. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast. If you got value from today's conversation, make sure to subscribe, rate, and share the show. And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or check us out at our website at ironcladunderwriting.com for more insights and updates. If you have a question, a deal you're analyzing, or a topic you want us to tackle, shoot us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep your assumptions grounded, your models sharp, and your underwriting ironclad.